First question, is it possible to be living in a hell realm while on earth? Of course, there's another world, underworld, we call it hell, but don't go that far yet. Just consider this world. Have you seen any hell in this world? Have you seen it on TVs? Have you been seeing that in your imaginations? When you're extremely mad that you want to kill yourself, you're in hell realm. When a depressed individual is locking himself up in a home and wanted to jump down from 16 floor high, he or she is really in extreme hell realm. When you're mad, when you're jealous, when you're greedy, when you're committing something immoral and something that's hurting other people, you're in hell realm. So why do you still want to find under the hell realm? Right on earth is right on earth. Stay away from the hell realm, or help people to get out from the hell realm. That's what we are doing. That's what the monks are doing. We're trying to tell them this is what we should do. This is how we can stay away from hell realm. Fortunately, you may not be in the hell realm now, but you're not guaranteed. Anybody can get into a hell realm. Have you ever heard anybody say, oh, hell? Have you ever heard of that? You already said it. It's hell. Why look for anything? Why still shopping around for hell? You want to shop around for hell, which is a better hell? A hell is a hell. On the other hand, that's heaven. The heaven is nowhere else, right in your heart, nowhere else. Heaven or hell, you make the decision, which decision you have made. Or you always make the wrong decision. But if you always make the wrong decision, I advise you to come more often. Or you should really start to pursue the Buddhist teaching. Then you're going into nirvana, that path of enlightenment, that path of purification, that path that is leading you away from hell into, I don't want to use the word heaven, because heaven gives people to think that, oh, in heaven I'm okay, I'm extremely happy. But according to the Buddhist teaching, even heaven has an end. You want to go beyond beginning and end. We want to go beyond that. But however, there's heaven and hell right in the heart. Sometimes you can see heaven and hell from the appearance of a person. Well, this morning when the sun is shining, when the birds are singing, and when the pine trees are giving out fragrance, I see people coming in the temple. I can see a spring in every step, a smile in every face. That's happiness. Right there, I can see happiness right there. Heaven, right there. Don't look for anywhere else. A song in every heart. So, where else do you want to look? Is this why some people exist in an unhappy life? Is it a choice? It is a choice. It's a choice up to you. Many people have taken the wrong choice. Why? Because they were involved with their six senses. They were involved with the individual egoistic excitement or temporary excitement of the six senses. Every day they're trying to fulfill their six senses, to fulfill their materialistic needs, fulfill their temporary pleasures. And in the process of doing it, they may be hurting others, they may be hurting themselves. The Buddhist teaching contains the path to purification and to happiness. Imagine if you live in the Second World War. You're in the hell realm for how many years? Second World War? 5 years. If you live in China, there was even more hell than anywhere else in the Second World War. If you want to know more about the atrocities of the Second World War, how did it become a hell to many victims? Get into Google to see the atrocities of wars. Then you say, how can humans impose so much atrocities on another human or another race? If you're lucky, you're in Canada. You're born in this age. So you're born in a time where hell is already gone. Really, the real hell is already gone. Why don't we try to create heaven every day in our heart? It's up to your mind, up to you how you create it. Learn the Buddhist teaching. If you come for the first time, this is your first most important moment of your life. Where have you been putting your emphasis on? On your studies, on your families, on your work, on the pressures, on mental afflictions, on jealousy, on hatred? Get rid of those. Put your emphasis on spiritual development. Put your emphasis on how to pursue that path of purification. Some people have been spending life to struggle for more money. And in their mind, nothing is more. When they have more, they want more. Insatiable. Where have you putting your emphasis on, your attention on? Why don't you just meditate and think about it? Where did I put my emphasis on, my attention on? Should I change it? What is better for me? That's all. Second question, from Buddha and Buddhism point of view, how and when the universe, living being, started? Oh, I encounter this kind of questions many, many times. I just want to ask you a question. Egg first or chicken first? The egg comes from the chicken comes from the egg. And you must say, there must be something wrong. Which is first? If there is a beginning, logically, I would think that if there's a beginning, there must be an end. So if there is a rising of something, there must be annihilation of something. Now, if you think of the beginning, and if you think of the end, then you start to think, is it logical? I think I'm logical to think of a beginning of an end, but if I start to think deeper, I may be illogical to think of a beginning and an end. Now, I know that most people, if not all, agree with the concept of causation. In other words, there's a cause and there's an effect. There's no effect without a cause. We call it causation. If you have cultivated a cause, if you have germinated a seed in the soil, to give you an example, the plant is going to come out sooner or later. When it matures, a seed is planted, that's just an example. A seed is planted, that's the cause. In between planting a seed and getting the fruits, there are conditions. There are conditions to make this come true. Conditions of watering, conditions of sunlight, considerings of fertilizers, considering of good soil, many, many conditions for this to come true. But if a cause is there, if the conditions are also there, the effect will be there, for sure to be there. There's no argument on that. So there's a cause, then there must be an effect. When will the effect come out? We don't know. But we can say the effect will not come out. We can say that. It's illogical to say that. We can say that, okay, we plant a seed, an apple tree seed in a plant, and we give all the conditions to it, the apple will not come out. It wouldn't be the case. Unless you're deficient in somewhere. Unless there's no sunlight, or unless there's no labor, there's no water, there's no nothing. But that plant is still waiting. So when there's a cause, there's an effect. Now, if you're talking about it's a beginning, there's an end, say, if I end this life, I have no more ending. That's what we call an end, right? Then whatever causes I have germinated, I have planted, there wouldn't be any cause, because my life is ended in here, in this life. So if there's no next life, there's not going to be any effect. You're already illogical. There's got to be an effect. If you plan, if you have a cause, there's got to be an effect. So why do you think of a beginning and an end? If you're thinking of beginning and an end, you can trace it. Where were you from? As I said in the very beginning, chicken or egg, which comes first? We don't have to consider so philosophical a question. I just asked you a common question. Chicken and egg, where does it come from? You can't give me an answer. You can only guess. And the Buddha said, go beyond this dualistic thinking. Go beyond this fraudulent thinking. Go beyond this temporal thinking. It's a thinking that is beyond. There's a thinking that is beyond logic. If we continue to trace the day before, there's no end to it. And even if the Buddha said, oh, this is what it is. At the beginning of the world, someone called Mr. A created the world. And he created you. He created the whole world. And people usually call him God. And say, oh yeah, that's a simple answer to a complicated question. Yeah, God, it must be God. A very simple answer. God? Where does the God come from? Still, you haven't answered the question. Because geometrically, it involves a long period of time. It involves a period of time that maybe beats understanding. And if anybody started to tell you something that traced back to many, many lives ago, is immeasurable, it's unending. I'll give you a computer, and I ask you, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4, 4 + 4 = 8, 8 + 8 = 16. Give me the final answer. And then every day you're sitting in there and you're printing and printing, you don't have to do anything. Would you come to a stop? Yeah, when you died. So why worry about these things? There's so many things to do. And if I ask you again, I have 1,000 billion. This is a figure that I have. Can I do a square root of it? A square root of 1,000 million, and then the square root of that square root of 1,000 million, and then the square root of that, and give me an answer right away. And I'll give you a computer. You have the help of a computer. You should give me an answer. How come you cannot? There's no answer to it. Because it's inexhaustible. And the Buddha said, and the Buddha give you another example. And there was a man who was traveling on a crossroad. And he was enjoying the weather, the breeze, the flowers, and boom, all of a sudden, an arrow boom shot into his right lung, you know, almost close to the heart. Is it left or right? I don't know. You know, to the body. An arrow shot into the body. And then he collapsed. And then everybody was gathering on him and say, what happened to you? There's 20, 30 people. And one said, where did the arrow come from? How do you get shot? Why do you travel here? Give me your passport. What is your name? They start to ask all sorts of irrelevant questions. And then the guy said, don't ask these silly questions. Get me to the hospital. And then he said, which hospital? What number? You get an ambulance first. What's the ambulance number? Can you tell me? Now, first of all, let's study, where does this arrow come from? This is an arrow of poison? Is it a black arrow, a white, and a feather on it? What is it made of? Of stone, of wood? You analyze the wrong thing. You got to save that guy first. You don't spend your time into trying to find the source of that arrow, where the arrow comes from, the beginning of that arrow. You're going to save that guy right now. You're going to save yourself right now. By meditation, by studying the Buddhist teaching, by taking the Vinaya, by taking the refuges, the three refuges, by studying to go to the pure path of purification, to go to Nirvana. So many things you have to do in an urgent situation, and you're not doing that. You're sitting in there and say, where does this arrow comes from? You're dead. You're dead. Can't save you anymore. I think that's enough, right? You think about it. Third question. So I study sutra with a logical mind that is trying to find and interpret everything logically. Are you that logical? That's good. Or with some other kind of method. Well, when you say other kind of method, that's what includes the illogical method. I won't suggest you to use illogical method. You should use logical method. But how logic is logical? Logic comes from the mind. Can logic solve all the problem? No. I studied symbolic logic before, and a lot of symbols. I still remember those symbols. We call it horseshoe elimination. If A is equal to B and B is not equal to C, then A is not equal to B. I mean, I get confused. Should I study sutra with a logical mind? Yes, I agree. We should study, first of all, with a logical mind to understand it, to interpret it. But we have to get into the deeper mind through practice of meditation to get into something deeper. In other words, try to understand your own mind first, how logical it is. What is it? It's a mind studying. First of all, get into the study of your own mind through meditation. And the first step in studying your mind is to control it first. You can't even control your mind. How can you study it? If the monkey is always jumping here and there, how can you stay put the monkey and start to study the monkeys biologically? You got to put the monkey on a leash and study it in detail. Put your mind on a leash first. Put your mind under your own control. Oh, my mind is always under my control. It's my mind, it's not your mind. Then how come you get mad? How come you commit all kinds of mistakes? How come you get depressed? How come you do a lot of silly things that you say, oh, I don't know why I did it. I can't control myself. You can control yourself. That means you can't control your mind. Can a non-human being be a Buddha? Yes? A non-human being, when you say a non-human being, an animal, all sentient being has the nature of Buddhahood, can be the Buddha. Yes. Simple question. In some spiritual paths, the love for God is central. The aspirant is asked to constantly remember God or a form of God. How Buddhism sees this idea of remembrance of God? How love for God could be correlated with the concept of Nirvana? The God is in you. Don't look for it anywhere. There's the God in you. Some people don't call it a God. Some people call it Tathagata, suchness. Some people call it the real mind. It does not matter how you call it. Don't think of God as a personification. But if you don't personify the God, you can't think of a God because you already have an idea or a concept to think about something. To think about something, the language comes first or a picture comes first. If you don't have a language, you don't have a picture, you can't think. So people personify the God. Then why don't we say God is just a word? It's a personification in your mind. It's not really a God, but it is a God. If you say the love for God inside of you, that means there is something real inside of you. We call God the reality, the real you. Say the real you is the God. So why don't we investigate more into the real you? Some people call it God. Does not matter how you call it. You want to call it God. Some people are so fixed on something that they can change the word. God is a God. If I change it, it becomes a sacrilege. If I change it, it becomes a blasphemy. It isn't. It depends on how you call it. We respect every religion. If it is a religion that is good, we don't respect religions that hurt others, that sacrifice others, because all sentient being has that Buddha nature. All sentient being has that real you in you that can be turned into Buddhahood. Again, Buddhahood is just a word. If you don't want to call it Buddhahood, you call it something else, up to you. Why do you want to create another name for it if somebody already created a name for you? So love for God can be correlated with the concept of Nirvana. That God is you, nobody else. Try to understand that God in you through the Buddhist teaching. And through the Buddhist teaching, it's not about blessings from Buddha. It's about how to understand that real you. And there are schools, sects of school in the Buddhist teaching that understand, that teaches you how to explore into the real you. For example, Yogacara. For example, Madhyamaka Karika. All these open up the avenues to understand the real you in you. Where have you been studying? You've been studying on finance, accounting, bookkeeping, computer. Maybe you should put your emphasis on this now. Second question. Again, those spiritual paths which used the love for God encourage emotions and changing divine. Is this emotion, divine emotion, against the Dharma? If the aspirants use that emotion blindly, and if the aspirant thinks that emotions comes from worshiping a third divinity, you are on the wrong path. That divinity is in you. Don't try to look for outside of you. If you look for outside, you can't find it. It's inside of you. Not just physically inside of you. That real you, you have to study it. All right, that's all. Another question, how many hours should somebody meditate to reach enlightenment? You always believe in the numbers. I say 6,000 hours. If you're not satisfied, 7,000. So how can anybody give you a number of hours? Can a layperson reach Nirvana? Yeah, anybody can reach Nirvana. Sometimes you have a glimpse of Nirvana, and then you lose it. In your meditation, you're so purified, you're so peaceful, you arrive at that equanimity. There's no other thought. Sometimes you have a glimpse of that real you in you. But that glimpse is not a continuous glimpse. You lose it afterwards. If you continuously maintain that nirvana, you're at the nirvana level already. Is the nirvana the same as merging in God? We're playing around with words in here. Nirvana is merging in God. We say, whatever we want to call it, yes, yes. Can I say also, nirvana is merging in you, that divinity you, inside of you, not an outside God. Buddha is the only sage who doesn't say God exists. Is he right and all other saints wrong? Or is there a middle ground? Buddha is the only sage who doesn't say God exists. Buddha doesn't say that. Buddha didn't say that God did not exist. You got it wrong. God's pronoun, proform, gods or devas exist. Many levels of gods, if you really want to define gods in that way. In heavens, there are gods in heaven. So many gods, so many heavens, different levels of heavens. It's just like in this world, people ask, in this world, sometimes it's happiness, sometimes it's sadness, lamentations, worries, tribulations, oh, you name it. Yeah, we're all in different level. Some people suffer, some people suffer less. Even in this here, the level of suffering, the level of happiness, all vary. Same in heaven. So Buddha is the only person who doesn't say God exists. So okay, gods exist, if you're satisfied. Gods exist. It's just like we exist. Humans exist. There's another sentient beings in another world, we call them gods, exist in another world. So if you study the three realms of the cosmos, and then you study the world of desire, the world without desire, the world without form, those who've been studying Buddhism for a long time, they know. There are sentient beings who don't have a form, no appearance. They are in extreme happiness. Their life is like a god's life. But they still have to go through reincarnation. Don't let that word God trap you in your thinking. Is he right or are the saints wrong? Is he wrong and are the saints right? Wrong and right. No such thing. You're living in a world of duality. You're living in a world where you label wrong and label right. Of course, morality, on a morality level, this is something wrong. You cannot do. This is something you should do. But why do you say that the Buddha is right or the Buddha is wrong? Or is there a middle ground? There's no ground. Not to mention the middle. No ground. Why do you want a ground? When there's no ground, why do you want a middle and what extreme end, one end, north, south, east, west? There's not even a ground. How can you say there's a middle ground or there's an extreme ground, there's a north, south, east, west ground? Strip off those. Let that war of opinions collapse around you so that you can see better. In the Buddhist, last question, in the Buddhist religion, do you believe in marriage between two people? Wouldn't that count as an attachment? It could be an attachment. It could be a repayment. It could be a repayment of debt, a repayment of emotion. A husband and wife, a man and a woman come together. Maybe they were in the previous life, they were husband and wife too. They have unfinished affair to do, and they come back again, and they want to finish it off. Some want to pay back the others, and the other maybe pay back the others. They want to balance out a debt emotionally, monetary also, in money terms, in kinds. It's all trying to look for balance. When a man and a woman come together, so they have very good relationship for 20 years, and on the 21st year, all of a sudden it collapses, and they say goodbye to each other. They already have paid off the debt, and all of a sudden you don't know why. Some lady said, "My husband loved me so much, and one day he came back and said, 'I'm not coming back tomorrow. I want to get out from here,' and I didn't see him again." You already paid him off, or he already paid you off. No more debt. The same applies to some family members, sons and daughters. I still remember I was working at Alberta one summer as a summer student in Alberta, in the Ben Spring Hotel in Alberta. I was as a pantryman in the kitchen, washing dishes, and then there was a fellow worker next to me, and he's 18 years old.
At that time, I was also 18 or 18 or 18 and a half. No, not 18 and a half, 21. And somehow I conversed with him, and he told me about his family. He said, my old man, my dad said, my old man, when I was 18, he kicked me out from the house and said, don't come back again. I don't want to see you. Get out. Well, I imagine in the Chinese culture, I don't think a father would have thrown a son out unless it's a very rare situation. But somehow at 18, maybe he already paid off his debt and said, go, don't come back again. I already paid you off. And how would a father be so cruel to say, don't come back again. I don't want to see your face. You get out, disappear from my life. You think that something would happen like that in the Canadian culture? Yeah, it happened. But not so much in the Chinese culture. So it surprised me. So now I know he already paid off the debt. No more debt. And this poor guy, 18, he lost his dad. He lost his family. He couldn't go back there. He tried to go back once, but he got kicked out again. So you're all paying attention to me. No one is sleeping, yawning. That's it. I still have a ceremony to do, 1:30. All right.